And welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Just because you're being exterminated doesn't mean we can't make it fun. Otherwise, what's the point of being killed? My very special guest joining me today from South Africa, where it's like real early in the morning, and I'm from New Zealand, where it's kind of real late in the afternoon, and we're broadcasting in America real late at night. It's real fantastic, I can tell you what. His name's Michael Tallinger. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Vinny. Nice to be speaking to you again. Been a while.
It has been a while indeed. What have you been up to in the interim?
Oh, you know, just troubling the world, spreading the message of contributionism, I guess. It's been my main focus. Doing the odd bit of research on the ancient ruins here and there when I get some time. And most of the time spending the initiation of the various community projects that we've launched here in our little town of Waterfallsboven, where we have the sort of the head office of the Ubuntu movement, and putting into place the foundations of the philosophy of contributionism, and showing the world that it is possible to do it with very little money, and a lot of goodwill from people who realize that unless we work together, our future is not going to be very exciting, I guess.
Well, because obviously if we're not in it together, we're playing into the hands of the divide and rule, kleptocratic scumbaggery pieces of filth that run the show truly.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, what I find is just amazing. Sorry, my brain is still waking up. Just I woke up at 4:30 to do the show with you, and I've had
how many sips of coffee have you had yet?
Yeah, the coffee doesn't seem to hasn't kicked in yet, by the sounds of it.
Skull it down. You know, doesn't matter if you've got a burned esophagus; it'll sound great.
You could speak in a deeper voice.
But what I found, you know, is that the willingness of people, and especially the youth of our town, and I'm talking specifically of the black youth who have really nothing. It's a downtrodden community. It has been a downtrodden community for so long, and when I say so long, it's specifically since the ANC government took over. That's when the fall really started into free fall, if you can call it that. In a spectacular fashion, and everything that was at least usable and that was built up with the money of blood, sweat, and tears of the previous generation, was put into left to ruin and destruction.
And so, my wife's South African parents are now living with us on a semi-permanent basis, and the story that they told me is just recently a law was passed in South Africa whereby if there's a government job that's up for filling of employment, they're no longer allowed to take any white candidates. And there was a case, in fact, where there weren't any black candidates who could take the job, so they took the job off the market entirely and shut the department down. And I said to them, well, isn't it ironic that a South African government would pass a racist law?
Yeah, it's, you know, what's going on here in South Africa. Look, I can't comment on that. I don't really know. So, but I've heard stories like what you're relating, but I don't know whether it's a law or whether it's just done because of the
corruption,
influence of the cabal. Because remember that the whole takeover, the change of government in South Africa had nothing to do with freedom and liberation. It was all to do with the perception of liberation, as you know. It's the perception deception. Right, and I think as David Icke called it, and it's very much the case in this country, was a perfect example of that. You know, taking what was created by a distorted and a disturbed racist government, who were doing just really amazing things on both ends of the scale, amazing things. On the scientific level and breakthrough technology in South Africa and in the world. If you think about what came out of South Africa in the 50s and 60s and 70s, and on the other hand, you know, inhumane things to the majority of the people of the country, And that was just replaced in by a regime that was completely and utterly controlled by the global banking cabal that run the South African Reserve Bank, that has completely and utterly stolen the country from its people under the perception of freedom.
Wasn't Nelson Mandela a Knight of Malta or something?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Now, you know, I'm not going to throw stones at Nelson Mandela because he's a holier-than-thou character. And at the same time, he did a lot of good for this country, and he certainly, towards the end of his life, spoke about unity and unifying and so forth. But remember that he started out by running in the ANC, who at that stage was blowing up things and resorting to violence and bad, you know, hectic violence. So I guess against a violent regime. So this just shows you how what you brought up earlier, the divide and conquer principle, has been so beautifully applied by those who want to continue ruling humanity is spectacular. So as long as we identify it and realize what's going on and how we've been played and how we continue to be played and how some people are influenced by this today to still continue the divide and conquer principle at all costs. And, you know, I speak of our personal experience recently, just come under attack by various people from the alternative media who are just amazing how in an area where we should be uniting people and exploring ways into the future of a unified consciousness and less anger, less venomous attacks on each other, to realize how we've been played and how we're being manipulated is spectacular. To come back to the positive side, because this I'm starting to sound a little negative here, and I don't like to do that at all. So what's happening here in our little town with our efforts to introduce this unity consciousness and working together for the benefit of all and so forth, this has been overwhelming. You know, I've been completely bowled over by the willingness of the people to participate and to make something out of nothing, the scraps that we're picking up and have to fix and make usable again is overwhelming. We are opening our town hall this weekend. What is today? It's Thursday morning. So it's tomorrow evening. We're opening our town hall after many months of fixing it up. It was completely vandalized. This was a five-star venue with a sports club and a huge hall and a ladies bar and all the best five-star facilities you can imagine have been completely left to ruin, vandalized. Everything was ripped out. The electrics, the light fittings, the plumbing, the toilets, the toilet bowls, the taps, the tables and chairs were being stolen. The doors were ripped off their hinges. It was spectacular. And so we decided that since this is a public facility and that it belongs to the people and should serve the people, about 6 months ago, I basically spent all the money I had and started closing the facility down and securing it so that we could start cleaning it up and fixing it up for the community. And so it's taken about 6 months now, and to the point where we have a venue that's ready to go. And it's not fixed, but it's usable, right?
What's the best you can hope for?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I did a little bit of crowdfunding was very blessed with getting some money in to be able to buy chairs and tables for the hall, because without chairs you can't really have a hall, right? To get some kitchen equipment, because we have a kitchen there, and this is where the community kitchen is also located, so that everybody that participates in the various community projects, we have about 24 of those that we've identified in our town. If you work in any one of the community projects, then you come to the town hall and the community kitchen to get your plate of food and your glass of lemonade. And you can watch a movie, you can use the community gym, and you can use the free Wi-Fi that we're busy installing there, just because you've contributed towards the benefit of your whole community and worked for 3 hours in one of the community projects. And this is how we utilize our collective efforts to benefit the people of the entire town. So
as opposed to every man for himself, it's everyone for everyone else.
Yeah, exactly. And this is, you know, the more you start working on this collective benefit for everyone, and I'm not talking about communism or socialism, I'm talking about something very different. We call it contributionism. And it's well outlined in my book, which is called Ubuntu Contributionism, A Blueprint for Human Prosperity. Almost a step-by-step manual that we're now putting into practice. So we really are walking the talk that we've been talking, or that specifically I've been talking for about 10 years now, since 2005.
So it's like a voluntaristic libertarian anarchism sort of thing.
Yeah, there's obviously a big plan and a short, medium, and a long-term plan here. But the first thing is to start getting the people working together to just start experiencing the philosophy of unity and working together towards a benefit of the whole community, without just trying to, you know, please yourself, or, as you said, just for yourself at the expense of everyone else. But I keep digressing a bit. What I'm amazed is, like, I thought 2 years ago, I thought it was going to be impossible to unite this little town of ours, because we really, it's a downtrodden, destroyed little town. It used to be one of the blue chip towns in South Africa during the apartheid regime, during the apartheid era. And I'm talking about for everybody. You know, if you talk to the young kids today who then were in early teens and so forth, if you talk to them, they speak fondly about the days before the ANC took over. It's amazing for me to listen to it. It's almost a shock to the system. And they speak fondly of when the soccer fields were beautiful and green, when the sprinklers would pop out and spray the water, when the greenkeeper would come and mow the lawn every week and had a beautiful green pitch, and the rugby field and the cricket field was working, and they would go to the club that we have now had to fix, and watch movies there and have famous stars and artists come and perform and entertain them. And all of that was destroyed. So the town was really destroyed. You know, we had a locomotive here, a choo-choo train, that was a famous choo-choo train from the Paul Kruger era. That was a huge tourist attraction. Thousands of people would come every week on the weekends to ride the choo-choo train from here all the way into the Kruger Park. That was shut down by the government and completely removed. Just it was almost like a malicious attack on the entire town and the community to destroy everything that was functioning and bringing a benefit to the town. And so I thought that it was going to be impossible to unite this town. And boy, how wrong can I be? Because
you'd be surprised how easy it is to unite people if they've got a common enemy.
Yeah, and that's exactly what's going on here now. And you know, it's deeply ANC. Everything, you know, ANC has their tentacles everywhere, and it's mostly through fear. People fear not being seen as supporters of the ANC, because they fear that if they're labeled as not supporting the ANC, they will lose their pensions, that the ANC will take their pensions away. Their grandmothers will be kicked out of their little tin shacks that are apparently supported by the ANC. All lies and deception. So it's all fear-driven loyalty that the ANC has created, or that they're not going to, that they're going to cut their electricity off or cut their water off, and threats like this. But even though some of the people still fear that, they've now started to see that in the last year, especially when we started doing our volunteer projects with our first volunteers that arrived exactly a year ago now. And it was a baptism by fire for us, learning to how to work with volunteers. That in itself is a huge learning curve, you know, and people arrive from all over the world: America, New Zealand, Australia, Canada, Sweden, Finland, Germany, Holland. And we got to get these people to work together in the various community projects that we've identified. And
did you, moving forward. Did you by chance have to learn how to divide and rule the volunteers themselves just in order to get it done?
Well, I tell you what, it's you know, I'm not a corporate guy. I don't have managerial skills like that. I don't understand group dynamics. And this has all been a huge learning curve for us on so many ways. So everyone is benefiting from this. Myself on many levels, and the community on many levels, the volunteers that come here with often, most of the time, with preconceived ideas. They think they're coming to some sort of a colony, and some of them think, oh, we're going to, it's like a weird hippie colony, we all live together and sing Kumbaya, you know, and sit around the fire and strum our guitars and play our drums. No, this is not that at all. This is hard work. This is, as I've called it specifically in the last 6 months, probably the toughest job in the world right now that we're walking and facing on a daily basis. It's really been tough in every level, financially, mentally, spiritually, emotionally, and yet we're getting through all of that stuff. But this time yesterday, I woke up and only to be told by Arno, one of our Dutch volunteers, who's project managing the opening of the hall and installing all the equipment that we managed to get together and scrape together, which is not the best, but it's enough to make it work. And we had a break-in at the hall, and they stole our PA system and our amplifier for the surround sound system and our projector, three of the major components to make the opening weekend a success or actually make it possible. So I was gutted yesterday. I feel a little bit better now. When I wake up, I'll probably feel a bit better, even more. But so I had to face the day yesterday with realizing we don't have a PA system for the music, for the band that's coming. We don't have a projector to show the movies for the weekend and the documentaries that we wanted to show the people. And we don't have an amplifier for the projector, for the music system that we bought specifically for that.
And you don't have any people with guns either?
Yes. So this is, you know, so it's, but what happened was quite interesting. Some of the people that work with us, and I remember we're in Africa, and contrary to popular belief to some people that think South Africa has become very westernized, some people don't know that or don't realize that. Even when people have cell phones and the latest technology, with no money in their pockets, I don't quite know how that works, but it does somehow. That's how they exploit the so-called third world and the real impoverished people of the world. They make them spend every cent they have on the useless technology that distract them from what's really going on in the world, right?
I suppose everybody's got their priorities.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, so what
happened? Am I going to eat today? Am I going to send a text message? I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. So some of the guys that are working with us, especially one of the ladies, Altar, she said she knows exactly where to go. There's a guy, you know, up the mountain from us, about a 40-minute drive. He'll know exactly where the stuff is. So I thought, wow, okay, let's get in the car and drive there. I thought it was like some sort of a dealer who deals in stolen goods or something. You know, I don't know. And so we get in the car, four of us, and we drive there while the others stayed at the hall and they carried on fixing and cleaning. And we end up at the house of a medicine man, a Sangoma, an old wise man that sits in a little hut, and people come to him for advice and protection. And I was astounded. And typical African style, you know, you arrive there and you sit and you wait until you are seen. So we spent a few hours waiting out up on, in the veld on the top of the mountain there, waiting for the old man. And I was astounded when we got into the hut. You could just feel his energy and his presence. This tin shack hut, he just sits there and people come in there in absolute humility and respect for the guy. And we literally walked in, we sit down, there's a little ritual that you do. You're not allowed to wear your shoes when you go in, and women have to, African women have to wear their sort of African sarong type skirts around them. And so we went in, we sat down, and within a minute, he anticipated what we came there for. He said he knows who took our stuff, he knows where they are, and we must come back tomorrow, bring one of the police with us, and he'll tell us who has got our stuff and where they live. And I was just absolutely astounded. If you tell this to people in a sort of New York kind of liberal society, they'll laugh at you. And yet this is what happens here. So when I finish this discussion with you today at not sure what time we're going to finish. Are we on for 2 hours?
About 7 o'clock in the morning for you, yeah.
7 o'clock, exactly. So 7:30 in the morning, I'm meeting one of the police officers at the police station together with Michael that came with me yesterday, my sort of right-hand guy here. And we're driving back up the mountain to meet the old man. And he's going to tell us all the information we want. Now, but he wants the police to be there.
You can't see the look on my face, Michael, but I really just got this big, big cheesy-ass grin on it because that's just too awesome to believe.
Yeah, it's amazing. So we're going to drive up the mountain with a police officer because he didn't want to give us the information in case we went to the guy's house, to the people's house and started beating them up, you know. So he wants the police to be there to share the information with you. And the police, the amazing thing is that the police, you know, we went to the police when we came back from this. It almost took us the whole day yesterday just to deal with this issue of somebody breaking in and stealing our stuff. You know, never mind that we have to get on with getting the venue ready for the events of tomorrow evening. And when we came back, we then had to go and, you know, report the incident because we hadn't reported it yet to get a case number and all that. And then Michael spoke to some of the police officers, especially the younger guys who are the sort of detectives, investigators, and they were laughing. You know, although they're African and they come from this kind of culture and they understand it very well. Being police officers, they've got a slightly different training and a take on these issues. So some of the young guys in civilians' clothes were laughing, but still they agreed to send one of the uniformed police officers with us this morning to the Sangoma to get this information. And that just blew my mind. I was so amazed and thrilled at the events that are going on here because we're tapping back into the culture and the unity, community unity culture that we're promoting with the contributionism philosophy. So it's almost we manifested that event to bring that kind of unity community philosophy back and working with it in this process.
It's one of those little events in life that encourage you and kind of try to convince you that you're doing the right thing. Keep going. Because I believe when it comes to theft and all of these sorts of things, I mean, I've spoken to quite a few South Africans and it's a rough place, you know. In some places, a friend of mine said, in his neighbourhood there were about 50 murders a week, and that was really good, because other ones are like a lot worse. I remember looking up the statistics; it's one of the highest murder rates in the world. So, I think that what your movement is really doing is it's injecting a kind of energy and mentality that hasn't existed in the region since before it got colonized.
Not only that, it's remember there's a much deeper and sinister agenda going on here. Remember that South Africa is really the golden goose that has been laying the golden eggs for 300-400 years, starting with the Dutch that arrived here in 1652 when it became a Dutch colony, and then the English came and colonized it and took it over. It's very similar with New York, right? New Amsterdam, and the English bought it from the Dutch and became New Amsterdam became New York, and so it goes. So very, very much the same thing happened here. The Dutch arrived here, they colonized, they started the first bank. The first bank in South Africa was a private company that was set up by the Dutch East India Company and started extorting and you know money from the people and introducing the concept of money to the people that lived here for thousands of years without that concept. And so the colonization of this country has been all about the minerals and the wealth of this country, and that was then really tied up by the Brits about 200 years ago, and then the arrival of Cecil John Rhodes, who pretty much took over the southern part of Africa in my opinion, one of the most evil human beings that's walked this planet for a long, long, long time.
Yeah, Zimbabwe used to be called Rhodesia after Cecil Rhodes, and when he died, he had like these. He had such immense wealth that he had 7 wills, and only one of them's ever made public. And I think, what was it, G. Edward Griffin and Carol Quigley or something like that, apparently most of those wills, maybe 6 of them, were basically to set up secret societies and other certain organizations in order to help advance the aims of the British Empire in perpetuity.
Yeah, absolutely. He was the gopher for the crown, of the British crown, that came here to secure this part of the world for the crown because of the minerals and the wealth. And this is why Southern Africa in many ways has been so stable politically. I mean, you know, we haven't had the kind of conflict and wars that you get in other parts of Africa because they can't allow it to get out of hand. So they create the perception deception that it's a bad place, and they've done that quite well. Although it's a beautiful part of the world, as you know, it's just spectacular. One of the most beautiful parts of the world you can find. And I've traveled extensively. I've seen other parts of the world. Although the world is a beautiful place, this is a spectacular part of the world, specifically with the minerals. So they secured Southern Africa as the golden goose. And I'm talking about all of Southern Africa, South Africa, Zimbabwe, Botswana, Namibia, or what was called Southwest Africa, Mozambique. And they made sure, and then, as you said, Rhodesia, which was Zimbabwe, but that was Southern Rhodesia, and then Northern Rhodesia was actually Zambia. So Cecil John Rhodes was the guy that really secured this part of the world for the crown and caused unimaginable strife and division and slavery of the people. And that was then perpetuated with the banking system. Obviously, the banks have been ruling the roost here, and these are all the Rothschild-owned banking criminal cartels that have been running the world.
Yeah, and didn't people like rise up against them or something? I mean, how are people able to take somebody seriously with a name like Cecil? Like, this guy's dangerous, you know.
You must see the Rhodes Museum next to the University of Cape Town, which is a really beautiful university, if you can call a university beautiful, because of the indoctrination that happens there. But let's put it this way: the location is beautiful because it's right on the side of Table Mountain, looking out over the winelands, and right next to it, against the sides of the Table Mountain, is, you think you're lost and you're somewhere in Greece or in Egypt, with this monument of these giant pillars that look out like somewhere out of Karnak or Egyptian, you know, temples. This Cecil John Rhodes memorial, it's just spectacular. And, you know, he was the most powerful man in the world for a long time while he was setting up this colony in Southern Africa.
That's not exactly a name that inspires fear.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't want to harp on the negative, but it's just important for people to just get a little understanding of what's going on here. So the money thing, and the fact that Southern Africa has been very neatly manipulated, made to look, you know, inhospitable and uninviting to the outside world, and yet it was kept stable enough so they could continue the flow of the gold and the diamonds and the platinum and the copper and the nickel and the chrome and everything you can imagine. And let me tell you, that has not stopped, because since the ANC has taken over, the mining industry in this country has gone completely berserk. It's almost unacceptable what's happening. Not almost. It is unacceptable. It is. We have become a mining colony for the global corporations that are raping this country beyond people's wildest imagination. And this is what needs to be stopped. And for those that just want a little bit of more inspiration, how we need to work against this money-driven, divisionist, capitalistic, consumeristic oppression of humanity, as you said, conquer by division, divide and conquer principles. what I found just before I published my book, Ubuntu Contributionism, I discovered that the assassination of Hendrik Verwoerd, who was well known as the father of apartheid. Well, he wasn't the father of apartheid. The British were the fathers of apartheid. They instituted apartheid in South Africa long before Hendrik Verwoerd inherited it from them and perfected it, and actually turned it into something that could have, in essence, worked if it was managed, but it was prevented from being managed because they killed Hendrik Verwoerd. Why did they kill him? And they made it look like a hate crime because of apartheid. It had nothing to do with apartheid. It had everything to do with money and the bankers, because Hendrik Verwoerd was about to do what 3 years ago, or 3 years prior to that, was done by JF Kennedy, who issued the United States notes and started printing money for the people by the people in the USA. And 6 months later was murdered in front of the whole world as a ritual killing to tell everybody, don't mess with us, we run the world. Hendrik Verwoerd was about to do that. He was about to pull the plug on the South African Reserve Bank, which you can imagine steals all the minerals from us. Because until very recently, and it's changed slightly now, I'm not going to go into the details, but until very recently, the Reserve Bank in South Africa owned all the minerals, everything that came out of the ground instantly was bought by the Reserve Bank with their pieces of paper that they issued to the government. A piece of blank paper, and they'd write on there whatever the value is, and they would issue this money, this piece of paper, and then take and steal all the minerals that came out of this country. And Hendrik Verwoerd was about to stop them and burst their bubble, and they got rid of him. And they made it look like a hate crime. It was such a ritualistic assassination. They stabbed him in the heart by clearly somebody who must have been like a Manchurian candidate kind of guy, mind control or something. And then they left the bloodstain from the assassination was left as a warning for 20 years or 25 years on the carpet in the office or in the area where it happened. I forget exactly what the area was. So the bloodstain was left there for 25 years, for everyone to see. Don't mess with us.
I think the ideal for a gangster is to keep a low profile and to take out the do-gooders.
Well, that seems to be the case, and it hasn't stopped. Obviously, it continues today.
I was just thinking about this yesterday, Michael. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I have really, really been contemplating how exactly, in terms of being able to be successful in rolling back the New World Order step by step or whatever, studying back in through history, it just seems that they've got huge quantities of trained assassins on the books, and they just take out people who are a threat to the system. If a movement gets really, really big and does a whole lot of things, it seems to be co-opted. It's almost like they're so evil that they want to prevent any kind of real successful hope to continue to flourish. You know what I'm saying? Like that's sort of.
I agree with you, Vinny. I think it has been that case for a long, long time. But at the same time, I think it is changing. Because I think because of their knowledge, the cabal or those that think they run the planet, they understand the universal laws that control everything, including their own existence and their own reality. And now we can get we're going to probably have to get into some really esoteric stuff, which I guess your listeners might enjoy. I'd rather talk about the positive stuff, about what we're doing here and how we're growing the Ubuntu movement around the world, the UK, Australia, Canada, USA, and other parts, 215 countries of the world that it's just exploding into, way beyond any kind of control. I hate using that word, but I can't stop it anymore. It's just gone so amazing. But the esoteric part of the control is interesting because, these guys that think they run the world and control the world also understand the fundamental laws of nature, and they understand what Gene Roddenberry referred to as the prime directive, that you cannot breach the prime directive. And for a long time, people have been using that word and using that that idea and not really understanding what that means. And in very plain scientific, if you want to call it that, scientific principles, the prime directive is, can really be described very clearly as the prime resonance frequency of all that in creation. Everything has to come out of some sort of primordial source, the creator, and the prime resonance frequency that is behind everything in creation. Remember, God said, let there be light. So it's the sound and the resonance that comes first, and everything comes out of that. Everything comes out of the primordial resonance, or the Om, and the sound of the creator. And so if it is not in resonance and in harmonic coherence with a prime resonance frequency, it is in dissonance and in dis-ease, and it will be discharged. It might take millions of years or thousands of years to be excreted, if you want to call it that, from the prime creation, because it's in dissonance. It can only be in existence if it resonates in harmonic frequency to the prime resonance frequency. And that is a very simple and easy way to understand how anyone and anything, if it goes against the prime resonance frequency, or as Rodbury called it, the prime directive, it will be destroyed. And the guys that are trying to run this planet know that they can't maliciously intervene and affect the natural and universal growth and exponential expansion of unity consciousness within the species. That means they're interfering with the evolution of the species. And Roddenberry said, you may not, prime directive, if you breach the prime directive, you begin your own demise. You will be destroyed. And they understand it. So I think that while they may have been on a killing spree for so many years with their assassins and their henchmen, that too is coming to an end, because they know if they continue that, they're pretty much eradicating themselves from the picture and from this creation. So that's a little bit of esoteric injection into this discussion of Ubuntu and contributionism, which, as you said earlier, in essence, is working in unity. So it is bringing a unity consciousness philosophy into our divided communities, showing people that if we work together, we can achieve so much more than if we continue this divided philosophy of working for each other and at the expense of everyone else. And look at this, how much I've accumulated and you've got nothing, you poor bastard. Why don't you work harder? And all that kind of idiotic philosophy that will get us nowhere.
Yeah, but what happens tomorrow if they do like a Kony 2012 on you and say, ah, Mr. Tellinger's a genocidal maniac or something, and they just start rolling in with tanks? You know?
Oh, well, they've started doing that already. You know, for some of your listeners that watch the alternative media will follow, would have seen some of the attacks on me the last week from some of our members and who I thought were our friends in the alternative media. And I'm quite astounded at the attacks that I've come under. And it's all character assassination. And it's always to do with money. It's, you know, shoot the messenger and accuse them of these things that we are trying to get away from, which is this money thing. So it's always about money and character assassination, that you're an immoral person and there's always money is always got to be involved. And I'm just astounded, but I'm not going to delve
into
that.
Well, you're taking somebody out of an original culture that's based entirely on money and then putting them into another one. There's going to be growing pains. And more to the point, because of the inherent challenge to the current paradigm of the private criminal bankers, they most likely will try to infiltrate, even at the early stages.
Yeah. Now, I have a fascinating thing that happened a week ago, maybe just more than a week ago. I received an email from a bank in Canada, and they invited me to a conference, to come and talk at a conference that they put in together of a number of people around the world and speakers and presenters. And they said, you were recommended as one of the guest speakers. We'll fly out first class and you'll be limousine driven. And I mean, I thought it was a hoax. I really thought it was a hoax. And I called my friends in Canada and I said, listen, do you guys want to help me check this out? Is this a hoax or are these guys for sure, for real? And my one friend Chris, one of the guys that's running the Ubuntu movement in Toronto, Chris said, okay, well, do you want me to call them up and check them out? So I said, sure, please do. And for sure, he called me back 10 minutes later and said, no, it's for real. These guys are for real. They want to bring you out there because they seem to want to put together a very alternative conference of, you know, out-of-the-box thinkers about global affairs and the global money systems. And you came highly recommended. So I'm just astounded at this development. Maybe that is an indication that some of the bankers are already realizing that if they don't change with this consciousness shift that is happening so fast and en masse, millions of people on a daily basis, if they don't keep moving with that consciousness explosion, they'll not only be left behind, but they'll start showing up the divide between where they are and where the rest of the community and the people of this planet are. And the divide will become so big and so obvious that eventually everybody will just very, very quickly will see, okay, well, those are the guys that have been, you know, enslaving us for so long. So, well, I don't know what their agenda is, but there must be an agenda there somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if I was a ruthless criminal banking cartel full of scumbags and sociopathic criminal psychopaths, I'd probably go, all these people doing good work, being very successful and everything that aren't really on our side of things, they're kind of in opposition to us. So how do we exactly eliminate the competition without making them aware that we're trying to eliminate? I know, we'll invite them to a conference. We'll let them speak. And we'll then rub shoulders with them afterwards and show them that we're not just such bad guys and things like that. And then we'll start suggesting certain things to them. These are certain things you should do. Hey, here's some money. And if you don't take the money, you're dead.
Yeah. Yeah, but not only that is that, you know, that then again, some of the lesser, I don't know, investigative people, so-called journalists in alternative media, as I said, as I've just recently experienced, will see me with these bankers and go, oh, look at that. Michael Tellinger is part of the Illuminati. What is he doing at a banking thing, talking at this huge bank? They're flying him around first class. They look at him. He's driving in a chauffeur-driven limo in Canada. He must be working with the Illuminati. You know, and that's the kind of thing they'll just jump to those conclusions. And that's where this is the sad part of this painful growth out of this divided kind of mentality. You know, it's just spectacular.
Well, have you ever expressed a complex thought and then the person listening to it then oversimplifies it and makes out like you're saying something that you didn't? You ever get that?
Yeah,
I get that all the time. Because the truth movement is really good at reading between the lines, and sometimes they don't read the lines at all.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. So that's the problem. They don't read the lines and they just jump to conclusions.
Mm. Yeah. It's a shame. And it's part of one of those little stages of growth, like, you know, the stages of grief, for example. I went through those when I was grieving over the loss of the idea that my government and police and utility companies were there to actually care and do a good job. You know, that was pretty sad for me when I realized that they weren't there to do that. So I got angry, yeah. I got sad, I went a little nuts, and eventually I came to accept it.
Yeah, and when you accept it, that's when you realize you have to do something about it and you have to find a way forward from that. And that's where it gets very interesting with the Ubuntu movement and specifically the foundation that we're laying here for the contributionism philosophy in our town. You know, and for people that are not aware yet, what we're doing is we're really taking our town as an example and trying to show or convert this into the first real working model of a Ubuntu contributionism town and the philosophy of contributionism, where everybody contributes a few hours a week or a few hours a day towards some of the community projects, and we start to create abundance for the whole community on every level. For the abundance will start small and it'll get huge in a very short space of time, the more people participate.
There's enough money and resources in the world for everybody to basically live the life of a millionaire. But the problem is, the billionaires and trillionaires don't want to stand in line with the rest of us. And because if everybody was like a billionaire or lived that kind of lifestyle, what distinction would there be? Okay? How could you hold yourself up higher above everybody else if they were if they were just the same as you?
Well, that very what you just described there is very obviously the one thing that we need to do immediately is to get rid of money or start eradicating money from the system so that you don't have that hierarchical structure and that pyramid structure from top down. You know, the few that have everything at the top and the masses that do all the work at the bottom. So this Ubuntu contributionism system actually turns that pyramid upside down. And it allows everybody to do the work for the benefit of everyone else. So what I found now is that the more people we get to participate with us, and when we started doing these community projects a year ago exactly, and I had my first meeting with the representative of the local municipality, and I present on the 14th of January. So that's exactly a year ago. We had our first meeting with a local municipality representative. I presented to him the document of all our community projects, what we want to do, and blah, blah, blah. And we never heard from them again. It was all hot air. Oh, sounds wonderful. Let me present this to the mayor and all the relative people, and we'll get back to you. Never heard from them again. Many, many phone calls, many emails, many messages via people that work in the municipality, and you know, just no response. And as I said, eventually we just decided that we can't not do anything because the municipality isn't coming back to us and doesn't want to talk to us. So we just did what I believe was the right thing and just invade and occupy, to use that word, occupy all the premises that belong to the municipality, which means it belongs to the people. And they're just the custodians of all those venues and facilities on behalf of the people. And since they're letting those facilities and venues to be vandalized and neglected, not maintaining or upgrading them or protecting them, we started to do that. And the community hall was the first place that we did that with. And 6 months later, we're now ready to open it. But what has started happening is that when we started doing all this stuff, wearing our Ubuntu T-shirts, and there was quite a bit of confusion, like who are these people? What's going on? And then a few key people in town that are well known in the community, like the guy that works with the electricity supply, and the guys in the municipal workers that work with the water supply, and so forth, started to support what I initiated and started to work with me. And suddenly I was seen with these guys who everybody knows, because if electricity goes out, he's there to fix it and reconnect you, right? Or he comes to shut you off if you haven't paid your bills. So suddenly when you're seen with these trusted people of the community, you must be okay. And suddenly we're seen fixing up the hall and the community hall, and the word starts to spread and people come out to work with us every day for no money, volunteers who come and decide they're going to work with me because they like the philosophy. And slowly but surely, the culture and support has changed so much that from a year ago, where very few people in the town knew about Ubuntu and what we are doing, now, wherever I go, wherever I walk now or drive my car, my old beaten-up Toyota, right, in case there's some of the people that still believe the rumors that are going around me that I stole millions. I find that quite funny. Sorry, I had to throw that in there. I know it's probably bad taste, but wherever I drive...
I'm sorry. Go right ahead. Finish your thought.
Yeah, no. So wherever I drive around in my old beaten-up Toyota or beaten-up truck... people call me Ubuntu. You know, I'm known as Ubuntu. Hey, Ubuntu. And when I went to the police yesterday to report the break-in, they know me as Ubuntu. And more people come to us and ask us, all the people that work at the court wanted my Ubuntu T-shirts. So they're all wearing their Ubuntu T-shirts now. And wherever you go, the kids stop you and say, hey, I also want an Ubuntu T-shirt. I'm stopped on the streets and said, can I get a membership card? I want to be a member of Ubuntu. Can I get a membership card? You know, and I say, no, we don't hand out cards. You're a member of Ubuntu in your heart. You know, we don't need a piece of paper to make you, you know, member of Ubuntu. You're always a member if you, it's in your heart. You don't have to prove it to anybody, you know, with a piece of paper. And that's a whole new concept to people because, you know, with the ANC and other political parties and those kind of movements, you have to have a membership card and you have to pay a monthly or an annual fee for that membership card. And with us, you're just a member for free and it's in your heart. You don't need a piece of paper. It's a whole new paradigm for the people, you know.
Well, it's they can't steal it and they can't falsify it, can they? Well, I suppose if they had, like, surgical tools, they could steal your heart, but...
Yeah. So, you know, you are a member of Ubuntu because you say so, not because you have a piece of paper. Like, I am who I am because I'm standing here and I say so, you know, not because I have an ID document that says I am who I am. And, you know, your listeners that understand the whole sovereignty thing will know what we're talking about here. So the support in our town has just grown to a breaking point now. And the reason I brought this up is because it seems to me that our municipality is now on the verge of collapse, as it has happened in many municipalities since the ANC takeover. Many have collapsed. It is bankrupt. The theft of the money, the people's money, the monthly rates and taxes, the contribution that we make, all that money is being stolen and siphoned off by the mayor and his sidekicks, and it's going into buying farms and buying properties and buying cars, and none of that money is being put back into, you know, maintenance of the roads and the schools and the the sporting facilities. Everything's being left to ruin. And we, the Ubuntu movement, started fixing all those things. You know, we've walked along the streets and picked up rubbish. We go and fix the soccer fields and mow the soccer fields. In the last 3 or 4 days, we've organized external grass-cutting machines, these large tractors, because the grass on the sports fields was higher than knee height. Okay, so, you know, we're in the middle of summer where we should be playing sports every day, and the guys weren't able to use the sporting facilities. We have 3 beautiful sports fields that are completely vandalized, a cricket field, a rugby field, and a soccer field, and you can't use them because they're just unusable. So Ubuntu organized the cutting of these fields. It's a little simple thing like this that makes the people turn to you and say, hold on, these are the guys that are actually doing something for the community. The ANC and the municipality are doing the opposite. They are making our lives miserable. So, what's been happening is that the municipal workers, and there's probably about 100 of them, have been on strike many, many times. I think this is about the fifth strike this year already. And basically, that means there are no municipal services. That's it. If your electricity goes out, that's it. It's out until they go back to work. If something goes wrong, it's too bad because the guys haven't been paid. They haven't been paid salaries by the municipality for 3 months. So,
well, we're coming to break now, Michael. I think you're doing precisely for a local municipality what I've done for New Zealand media. Is just basically you see a problem and you know that people are suffering as a result of the lack of officialdom's response to what is needed, and then you just go out and do it on your own time, on your own dime, and you just get it done simply because it needs to be done and you're following your heart. Michael Tallinger is my very special guest, ladies and gentlemen. We shall be right back after the break at the Vinnie Eastwood Show on freedomslips.com. And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number 2 of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting from New Zealand, live from the future. And the future looks bright. I might reconsider that later on when I get exterminated. My very special guest is Michael Tallinger from slavespecies.com, who incidentally started a movement full of people who aren't slaves called the Ubuntu Movement. Michael, welcome back. Has he gone away for a coffee, has he? All right. That's very nice. Well, that's interesting because I was just thinking on the break, you know what I should do when I should come back? I should do what I keep forgetting to do. Ask for donations and support so I can actually keep continuing to provide this platform for people like Michael and others around the movement who are so freaking bright and have so many good ideas to share with the universe, and yet they're spending so much time and so much effort into creating those ideas and what have you, that they simply lack the time and effort and resources sometimes to create a platform to spread said message. And this is just one of those, more or less. So if you want to continue to contribute that kind of thingy to the world, please go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and donate today. And if you are very, very kind indeed, if you sign up for a regular monthly gift of a few bucks, that would be really nice too. And basically it pays for just me surviving so that I can do what I think needs to be done in order to ensure the survival of a free human race. Because there's not much point in surviving if we're not free. Michael, welcome back. Michael, are you there?
I'm here. I guess I had to unmute my mic, right?
Oh, yeah. Hey, wait. So your name's Michael and we just unmuted you? Unmute your mic.
Yeah, I was gagged and bound during that break.
You can't make this stuff up, ladies and gentlemen. He has been invited to a banker's conference, after all.
Yeah. Well, I'm waiting to see what comes out of that, by the way. I emailed the guy back just to finish that story because we sort of got off that subject. After I got the call back from my friend in Toronto, Chris, that said, no, these guys are for real. So I emailed the guy back and I said, look, I'm not sure how to respond to you because when I got your email, I thought this was a scam or a hoax. And I said, are you sure you want me to come and talk? Please have a look at the Ubuntu website. Look at the things that I say about the banking industry and then think about it again before you want me to come out there because I'm going to come out there and I'm not going to be kind to what you guys do. I'm not going to hold my punches, you know.
Wouldn't it be hilarious if they turned out to be Nigerian scammers?
No, I don't think so. It is a real bank. Chris checked it out, and it is a real Canadian bank. They're relatively well known. So let's see what happens. But
hey, can I say something on that point? Because I've been arguing with people recently about the Jews. All right, you know how some people blame the Jews for everything, so that they control absolutely everything. Like right now, my water doesn't have ice in it, and it's the fault of the Jews, obviously, because they want me to sweat while I'm on radio.
Must be the Jews.
Okay, so what I've been trying to convince people, unsuccessfully, I might add, is that there are people who, you know, call themselves Jews, who are in fact criminal psychopath scumbags with a shockingly large amount of money, who finance all sorts of black ops and CIA projects, etc., all over the place. Sure, but it doesn't mean, upon one's bar mitzvah, all around the world, you suddenly get brought into the fold and say, look, everybody else is a goyim, they're slaves, they're scum, you're the ruling class of the world, and you're never going to have to work again, and unless, of course, you want to do something honest with your life, in which case we might have to kill you. Right? I don't think that's the case, but there's some people who actually believe. Every single person, the entire world over, whether by bloodline, by conversion, or whatever, who is, you know, in some inexplicable way, a Jew, is, in fact, a member of the conspiracy. That's freaking insane. Just like they don't have control over every single industry, including the banking industry. I'm sure there's plenty of banks who have managed to resist the taint thus far. And this might be one of the institutions that is contacting you, Michael.
Well, or it might be one of those institutions that realize that they have to lead the humanity into the new way. And maybe the CEO had an awakening moment and he said, how am I going to do this in the face of absolute, you know, Rothschild, Rockefeller, banking control, Morgan control, whoever those scumbuckets are that control the global banking cabal. How am I going to do this since I'm now in this position of running this bank? How am I going to surreptitiously move away from this enslavement of humanity and help the people out of this predicament? Because everyone has their awakening moment, and the banking CEOs are human beings as well. Their DNA is being activated as much as your and mine. Their enlightenment comes in various forms and ways and guises that you cannot predict. Everyone has their trigger point. when that penny drops for them and they realize, I cannot do this anymore. I can no longer do the job I'm doing because I'm destroying this planet, I'm dividing humanity, and I'll no longer be part of that. Now, if you're the CEO of a large banking corporation, how do you deal with that enlightening and awakening moment of yours, right?
It would be a kick in the teeth for sure.
Yeah, and I guess it's happened to some of them, but most of them to this up to this point, I've certainly haven't seen any other indicators other than this particular
example.
Do
you have any idea how many like major banking figures have like quit their jobs or committed suicide in the last couple of years?
Like, oh, absolutely. I've seen that. Probably more than 1,000 at this stage.
Yeah. I mean, the last article I saw was like 2-3 years ago or something like that. And it said like 500 top banking officials committed suicide in 1 year.
Yeah, it was more than last time I saw, which is more than a year ago now, was more than 600 bankers had committed suicide. And that obviously says a lot.
Well, actually, if you look into some individual cases, you start to wonder about that, whether or not they're committing suicide via conscience. For example, one guy committed suicide with a nail gun 6 times in each temple.
Yes.
Not exactly a suicide technique. These are cover-up murders.
Yeah, of course they cover up murders. Many of them are, and probably most of them are, because these guys reach a moment of enlightenment and they rush off to their colleagues in the bank and start telling them, sharing the information with them, and they very swiftly remove from the equation. So, yes, yeah, I shot myself in the head with a nail gun 6 times. Yeah, of course.
No, 12 times, 6 on each temple.
12 times, yes.
It just gets more ridiculous, you know. One guy fed himself to a wood chipper.
I threw myself off the top of the building, leaving nail marks and scratch marks and bite marks in the side of the concrete.
I mean, you know, obviously that's part of your just general way of going about things when you don't want to live anymore. You fight for your life. Now, speaking of which, have you noticed that there's this propensity for people, and you mentioned this earlier, and I kind of want to cauterize this wound, as it were, this intention of positive and negative stuff. Now, a lot of things that people are interpreting as negative is simply a fact-based retelling of history. Now, let's face facts here, the world isn't all sunshine and rainbows. But just because something doesn't sound very nice and lovely doesn't mean it's negative. In some cases, you're actually bringing enlightenment. You're bringing clarification. You're bringing understanding, which I think is inherently positive, no matter how scary the information.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And so it's not about... But I guess it's how you bring the information. Yeah? If you say, oh, my God, did you know that this is a rama? You can say, wow, did you know that we've been enslaved on our planet for at least 300,000 years, probably a lot longer. And if we don't do something about it, it'll carry on for another bloody 300,000 years.
Hey, that'd be good on a T-shirt. Did you know that humanity's been enslaved for 300,000 years?
Yeah, exactly. And the reason I say this and I can say these things is because of, you know, my research into the origins of humankind and the ancient civilizations and the tools and artifacts and the technology that I found here in South Africa and Zimbabwe that I've been sharing, as you know, and many of your listeners will be aware of that. But that all leads to, so what do we do with this knowledge and this information? It's all great to know that stuff, but then if you don't put it into context and don't use that knowledge and that information for the benefit of humanity and yourself at the same time as part of humanity, then you've just collected a bunch of interesting information and you're not putting it to any good use. So that's really where the philosophy of Ubuntu and contributionism came from. In my particular example is my awakening moment and my... The penny that dropped for me is when I was doing the research on these ancient cultures and I realized, oh my goodness, this is obviously, and I've got the evidence, I got the advanced technology from, you know, 300,000 years ago and all this stuff. So I suddenly realized that, okay, well, we've got to do something with this information. And that something has turned into the global Ubuntu movement and that have now got political parties as part of the Ubuntu movement as a political front to spread the unity consciousness message and inject the seed and virus of consciousness into the political beast. And that's spectacular because it's just unimaginable. A year ago, I couldn't have told you, I would have told you that you'd be lying to me if you told me how the Ubuntu movement was going to explode around the world. Because a year ago, I still was not aware that we were going to participate in the South African elections as the Ubuntu Party. And then we ended up probably with close to 1 million followers going into the South African elections. You know, now some people say, well, wow, how can you come up with that kind of number? We know that from the SMSs that we got, the text messages. We know that from the emails we got. We know it from the online marketing campaign where we had more than 800,000 responses from people that said they supported the Ubuntu Party and the philosophy. So plus the 200,000 database that we had for the Ubuntu Party and my own database and then the New Economics Rights Alliance, Scott Kundal's database in South Africa. It was 1 million people, 1 million followers that we had into the election. For a tiny little, never heard of before, movement of unity consciousness that morphs itself into a political front so that we can inject that seed of consciousness into the political beast, that was unimaginable. Obviously, we did not get a seat in parliament because that was never going to happen. We know that we got close to 200,000 votes or probably more based on the feedback that we had. But the official results gave us 8,432 votes, which was a shock to the system. But at the same time, it was a very sober message and realization how completely corrupt and manipulated and controlled the election process in South Africa is. I remember that our manifesto a year ago, or in May 2014, going into the South African elections, is the same manifesto that is now being taken into the UK elections on also the same date, the 7th of May 2015. Isn't it interesting that the global cabal is using the 7th of May as the date for elections in South Africa and then in the UK the following year?
I think that is very interesting. Almost as interesting as when John Key, the Federal Reserve Banker, became the New Zealand Prime Minister, representing a blue party on a campaign platform of change. Does that sound familiar?
Right. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, we went into the Ubuntu movement globally has just exploded, as I said. I'm not in control of it. People absorb the philosophy. It resonates in their heart. They don't need a piece of paper to prove that it resonates with them, and this is how it's spreading. And we structured a seven sort of point-based manifesto for the elections in South Africa, and the main anchor point that we used going into the South African elections, I don't know if you remember seeing the TV commercial that I shot that was shown a few times on South African television before the elections, and it very clearly says, we're going to close down the South African Reserve Bank and replace it with a People's Bank. Now, that is not if you say that without a political party, not on a political platform, it could be seen as treason, because you could be seen as undermining the economic stability of your country, and that's treason, and you go to jail for life. And this is one of the reasons why the political platform was created, so that we can not only infiltrate the political beast and just plant that seed of consciousness into some of those politicians, because many of those politicians are not bad people. They just don't know what's going on. They don't know how to solve the problems. They don't have the solutions. They think that they can solve the problems using some economic manipulation, which you and I know is not going to happen, because you can't solve the problems with using the same tools that created the problems. So when they realize that there is a solution, that by changing the supply of money as the first point of departure, by creating a people's bank that issues money for the people, by the people, tax-free and interest-free, everything becomes possible. There's 100% employment. There's no joblessness. Everything that every community wants to do for the upliftment and benefit of that community will be possible because the money will be provided by the people's bank. Now, that message, you can imagine, must have sent shivers down the spine of the South African Reserve Bank. And there was a very clear directive to the Independent Electoral Commission that run the elections that said, The Ubuntu Party will not even get a sniff of Parliament, because they know once you get one seat in Parliament, everything will change, because that's when that repetitive mantra kicks in. And on a daily basis, you stand up in Parliament when you get your chance to speak and you repeat the same mantra: close down the private reserve bank and open a people's bank that issues money for the people, tax-free and interest-free, that makes everything possible and releases the people from financial and economic and debt slavery with immediate effect, not a delayed effect. It's an immediate effect. It's a pressure cooker that you just take the lid off and release all that pressure that the people are under, the misery, the stress. And now this is now transformed into Ubuntu Party UK, which is running in the British elections on the 7th of May. And because the system in the UK is very different from the South African system, there is a very distinct possibility that the Ubuntu Party UK may end up with one or more seats in Parliament. Because in the UK, if you run or stand as a candidate for your constituency and you get the most votes in your constituency, you go to Parliament and you are then a member of Parliament for that particular party, which is not the case in South Africa.
So is South Africa a first past the post system? Is it?
Yeah, it's you don't vote for, you can't stand as an independent in your area. You can, I guess, but you'll never get a seat in Parliament, because you need a minimum number of votes for the political party as a whole. So the it doesn't matter how many candidates you've got; it's how many total votes you get that will allow you to get into Parliament the whole country.
So you'd actually have to votes. Yeah. You'd actually have to beat the ruling party in order to get in?
No, but you have to get a minimum number of votes. In South Africa, it was, I think, 50,000, very close to 50,000 votes that you needed for one seat in Parliament. Now, this is why they can manipulate it. You see, it's very easily manipulated, and this is why it's a secret vote. Nobody must know your vote. Of course, because if it's a secret vote and nobody knows who you voted for, then nobody can claim how many votes there are for certain parties, because there's no names attached to it. So they can manipulate it. They can burn and destroy votes and replace them with, you know, with other votes for certain other parties. And this is what they do very successfully. And we've got lots of evidence of that, obviously.
You don't really have to convince me that there's an African country that's got rigged elections.
Mm. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's a given.
We sort of believe that South Africa has become a little bit more, I don't even know what words to use here. Sophisticated is the wrong word, but more manageable or more, I don't know.
Domesticated.
Whatever. It's not the case. It is completely controlled. But in the UK, if you stand as an Ubuntu Party candidate in a small constituency of, say, you know, 5,000 people, and you go out there and you spread this message of Ubuntu and contributionism to those people who are equally miserable and downtrodden and know that something is wrong and know that something needs to be done, we might have a few surprises in the UK, because it's a lot more difficult to suppress or change the number of votes for an individual in a constituency than it is for a party in a voting district in South Africa. So we'll see what happens. We are doing everything we can to help spread the Ubuntu Party UK message to the people of the UK. And Paul Toussaint is the guy that registered the party and is the party leader in the United Kingdom. And we hope to get about 100 candidates in the UK to stand as candidates for the election. All they have to do is go onto the Ubuntu Party UK website, get the information, fill in the form that they want to stand as candidate, then go onto the Electoral Commission's website, download their candidate form, fill it in, go down to their local electoral office and hand it in and pay £500 to stand as a Ubuntu Party candidate.
£500, that's a lot. In New Zealand money, that's like $1,500.
£500, yeah. Well, it's nothing. In South Africa, we had to pay 600,000 rand to participate in the elections as a party. You can't participate as an independent, so you have to participate as a party. So you still have to pay. If you want to participate on the national and the provincial level, it's 600,000 rand, which is $60,000.
So when they say anyone can run for parliament, and every country says it, oh, well, if you don't like it, run for parliament. Okay, who's going to finance me? I mean, that's question number one, isn't it? And exactly. This is how we know that money runs the elections, not candidates.
Absolutely. So it's not free and fair elections, because the barrier to entry, once again, as in everything in life we know now, is money. So unless you got money, you cannot run in the elections. And, you know, we were
in a very literal sense.
That's it. The bankers control the elections. But in the UK, because, you know, you can go and beg and borrow and get loans. £500 is a lot less than $60,000, right?
Wow, you actually had to come up with $60,000 to do the. My God.
And we did it. That was the amazing thing. So it was some sort of divine providence that the Ubuntu Party South Africa had to be in the elections to just pave the way for others to do what we did here. And in a way, to come back to our little community. So, sorry, let me just finish this. So at the moment, the Ubuntu Party is being formed in Australia, in United States, which is more complicated, and Canada, which is very, very close to being finalized. They need 200 signatures to register the party, and I believe they're very, very close. They need a few more signatures. So in case you're anywhere, you're a Canadian and you want to, you know, get the party registered, go into the Ubuntu Party Canada website, download their form, fill it in, and send it to the guys that run the Ubuntu office there, and get those 200 signatures so they can register the damn party and start campaigning for the Canadian elections, which I believe are happening this year as well, either this year or next year. I'm confused now between the USA and Canada. But the UK is the next big thing, because you realize, obviously, that's the crown. That's where all the trouble started, and that's where all the trouble is being controlled from. So if we can inject the virus from little South Africa, which is the golden goose for the crown, and still continues to be the golden goose by all signs and indicators here. We laid the foundation here, and now it's going straight from the belly into the brain, or into the heart of the beast in the United Kingdom. And boy, it's going to be interesting to see just one voice in Parliament in the UK that repeats on a daily basis, we're going to close down the Bank of England and replace it with a People's Bank. I mean, that's just, you can imagine, that is global tremor ramifications.
Well, everything just, what was it? There was a line in Lawrence of Arabia, big things have small beginnings.
Yeah. We might just be sitting on one of those. We'll see. After 7th of May 2015, a lot is going to happen. A lot of water is going to flow under this bridge until that date. And, let's just spread the message. Those people that resonate with this philosophy of unity within community, turning this capitalistic monster on its head, allowing us to create abundance beyond our belief by simply working together in cooperation as opposed to competition, making everything possible, turning our small towns and villages into beautiful places like paradise on earth, allowing people to escape their slavery from the giant metropolis cities, being able to move out of there without fear of not having a job or anything to do, knowing that they can live a beautiful life, immediately go and register for the Ubuntu Party or support the Ubuntu Party UK if you're a UK citizen. Support them and let us get one seat in Parliament in the UK, because that'll be the domino effect for every other country. As you know, what happens in the UK affects the whole world. So,
as you've said, this isn't exclusive just to the UK. I mean, this is important right now because there's an election coming up. But as you've said earlier, there are Ubuntu parties in every country. Well, many, many countries, aren't there? So if you're listening on the radio right now and you're interested in becoming part of the movement, you know, search Ubuntu Party and the name of your country and you might come up with something. Am I about right?
Yeah, absolutely. Or just go onto the Ubuntu Party, the main party website, which is the one that I look after. And obviously, we try and manage and control everything from there. We've already had many people try and undermine us and do all kinds of nasty things to our website and so forth, but they're not succeeding. So just go onto the main Ubuntu Party website, which is ubuntuparty.org.za, find the join us button and fill in the form. Tell us that you want to be a candidate in your country, and so that we can put you on a list of approved candidates, so we know you're okay, you're kosher, and you're actually with us, and you're not someone that's trying to undermine us and start spreading some other philosophy and scamming money off people through all kinds of things that has happened already. And that's how character assassination of the Ubuntu movement by making it look like we're scamming money from people, right? So,
well, it seems to me that, again, whoever's in fact, it doesn't matter who the hell you are. If you start becoming successful at whatever it is you're doing, you're always going to have people try and drag you down.
Yeah, no, and boy, I felt that this last week especially has been quite tough on me personally and emotionally, and then I just realized, and I also want to thank all the people that have been sending me messages of support and the text messages and the messages on Skype and on Facebook and emails through the Ubuntu Party websites and so forth. Just thanks to all those that have not lost their faith and belief in what it is that we're doing, and understand that all these slanderous attacks on my integrity and my character is nothing less than nothing more than just trying to undermine the integrity of the movement by trying to assassinate the messenger. That's all it is. It's all throughout history. This is how they bring down, threats to the control system.
I mean, and just remember, and I think about a third of people will believe anything they hear, literally, without checking a single fact. And it's important to remember, especially in this day and age, about the difference between supposition, opinion, and fact. Because if you don't know the differences between these things, there's no way to tell whether or not somebody is giving you the truth or a distorted version of it that's designed to make you swallow it and support what they're saying anyway. A whole lot of people are saying in this day and age, we've got more access to information than ever before. And I say, well, while true, we've also got a hell of a lot more access to misinformation and disinformation than ever conceived possible.
Yeah, absolutely. But in the end, truth resonates. And truth will always eventually resonate its way to the top and permeate through all of these things. So one just got to keep that in mind. And the other important thing is, I think we touched upon earlier, the more work you do towards uniting this divided planet of ours, the more work you do to that, and the more your work starts to stick its spearhead into the wound of the controlling cabal, the more the opposing energetic forces will be. So I guess one has to be prepared for it. And I've experienced it. The last few weeks have been very severe, energetic attacks, and I guess you can call them psychic attacks. I don't want to get all too weird here, but man, if you know what's going on, if you understand the technology that is used, that the controlling groups have access to, I mean, it's spectacular technology. You'll know what I'm talking about. The mind control frequencies, everything around us. We live on a prison planet. Everything is a control system.
Just look up.
Even the frequencies, Vinny, that are coming through the computer at you and me right now probably have some sort of frequencies encoded in it to have some sort of an effect on the way we behave and think and speak.
Well, technically they do. It's called EMF and EMR, wireless electricity and dirty electricity, which inhibits cell growth and puts them into a stress response, inhibits your thinking, and can also react and cause autism and about 76 other known diseases, as was known since radar studies back in the 70s. And instead of correcting any of these problems with the insulation or the blocking of said signals and wireless radiation, they've allowed about 90% of the available frequency patterns that are even available to be broadcasted on to be so. And in so doing, whenever you're walking around, you're being bombarded by a compartmentalized fashion of goodness knows how many different frequencies that ain't good for you. And that's just what's happening to everybody by sheer osmosis. That's not talking about technotronic weapons. My friend James Wright, who's written a book about exposing Freemasonry, who was like at the tippy top of the pyramid with these guys in the Supreme Council, he picks up a phone one day and a tone goes off in his ear and his back almost snaps in half and he convulses and he wakes up a couple of hours later. All right? This is the kind of stuff that's... Yep. This is the kind of stuff that we're talking about here, man. Deep, bad, shadow conditions. Everything that you've seen in a sci-fi movie, these people who make these movies aren't all that creative, okay? Anybody who's seen Rocky VI will know this. I mean, come on. What do you think is going on here, ladies and gentlemen? These are allegories and things that will really kind of actually clue you in to what is really, really going on, to a degree.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. They're called blockbusters. Why? You know, where does that name come from? Busting the block of your unconsciousness.
Either that, or it's an old mining term. You know, where you literally were chained in a chain gang and sat there with a sledgehammer all day and all night, busting blocks with that hammer.
Mm. Yeah. So,
but I don't know how that relates to movies.
Just come back to what we were talking about before the break. Just to highlight the great progress and achievements we're making with introducing converting our community into a contributionist community of unity and prosperity for the people. What's happening now is our striking municipal workers, who I mentioned haven't been paid for 3 months. Until recently, every time they went on strike, they caused havoc in the town, and they would go and just dump all the rubbish and trash from the rubbish dump on the streets. So the streets were undrivable. It was just a disgusting stench and mess and unimaginable to people in the West, I suppose. And that was just not good, because they were sort of separating themselves from the rest of the community, saying that, you know, we've been badly treated by the municipality, and we're now going to let everyone in town feel our pain. As opposed to telling the people of the community, saying, look, we're not being paid and we need the support of the community. Well, that is now stopped. They no longer trash the streets and trash the town. They have now resorted to starting to figure out something else. And lo and behold, that resort is to come to me and talk to me. Now, this is, remember, these are all staunch ANC supporters. And they've now stopped going to the ANC, and they've now turned to me. Why? Because they've seen me drive this Ubuntu movement and fixing the sporting facilities, fixing the town hall, organizing soccer games and volleyball games and netball games and et cetera, et cetera. I can't even think of the other things we've done right now. Feeding the people, the community kitchen, and so forth. And they're coming to me now saying, what do we do? How do we solve this? Have you got solutions for us? And the reason they're coming to me is because it is slowly but surely over the period of the year, as I mentioned, we first met with the municipality exactly a year ago, 14th of January, and that seed was planted with a few of these municipal workers that then became our allies. And they've sort of filtrated this message, and it's taken a year to really filter in. Now these guys realize that we're not here to scam them or steal their money, all that. But we're here to help the community and actually help them out of the misery that they're in of not being paid, exploited by the municipality.
I can't understand why they'd be suspicious of you stealing their money when all their money's already been stolen by the municipality.
Yeah, or whatever, you know, whatever thoughts might be going through their heads, or might losing their benefits because they don't support the ANC. That's really more what I was trying to say.
Fear of reprisal.
People still live in fear. It's fear-driven, it's fear-based loyalty that the ANC has created throughout the poorer, especially the poorer and ignorant communities in South Africa. The illiterate. Remember, we have large illiteracy, like 50% illiteracy or something like that. And And so a lot of these people still believe that they're told, if you don't support the ANC, you'll lose your job, you'll lose your pension, and et cetera, et cetera. So now they no longer have that fear, and they've been talking to us. And what's happening very quickly here is that they're starting to think that we no longer should be paying the municipality the rates and taxes, that we should create an alternative kitty to pay our rates and taxes into, and then use that money for the benefit of the community. Well, this is exactly what the Ubuntu philosophy is. If the municipality is not serving the people and they're stealing the money from the people, then we will form a council of elders. So I can't be blamed for running off with the money or anything like that, because it's always going to be about the money until we get rid of the money, right? And then creating a council of elders, creating a trust account, and any six of those elders must be responsible for that account. And then the people start to deposit their monthly fees and taxes and levies into that account. And then we use that money to pay the municipal workers, to pay for the various community projects that we've already initiated with the Ubuntu movement, and start creating prosperity for the people in this way. But what has happened in the interim is that because our municipality is bankrupt, they've stolen all the money, they haven't been paying the electricity bills to the electricity supplying company, which is called Eskom in South Africa. It's a huge global monster. It is truly, they do, 300 billion dollars a year turnover or something stupid like that. What has happened here is that Eskom is on the verge of pulling the plug on the entire town because their bills haven't been paid. So you can imagine what ramifications that has for our town of 5,000 people. And I've been talking to many scientists and inventors around the world with alternative energy or electricity supply machines and, devices. So that message is now also filtered into the community. And we had an impromptu meeting under a tree, as one does in Africa. You get together and you sit under a tree in the shade and you have your what's called the kotla, or the meeting with the elders and the chief. So we had this impromptu meeting with some of the striking municipal workers. And again, they came to me. They needed help to get from our town to the neighboring town to go to a meeting of all the striking municipal workers from the four towns that fall under the umbrella municipality. So I helped them with a couple of bucks to get a taxi there, which I always do. I sort of seem to hand out money to all the people that need help in this town. They then started talking to me about what are we going to do about this electricity problem. They've heard that I might have some solutions. So I told them, yeah, there are a few possible solutions, but that means we have to really stand together and really get the community together. And they then suggested to me, and this is amazing, this all comes from them, not from me. So it just shows you how this thing has turned so quickly within 1 year. They said, let's have a community meeting. Invite as many people of the community on Tuesday night, so it's after this weekend, next Tuesday, to the new community hall that we just fixed up and launching and opening tomorrow night. Let's have a community meeting and talk to the people. The municipal workers will talk to the people and encourage the people to create a new community trust fund, a bank account, to pay all our money into and stop paying the municipal rates and levies and taxes.
What's interesting is that you're not taking over the community, you're taking it back.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we're doing. Remember, the town belongs to its people. And this is, again, this is one of the Ubuntu Party first messages that we sent to the people when we go into the political front, the political arena. Just remind the people the very basic facts. The government is the servant of the people. The municipality is the servant of the people. If they're not serving the people, we need to get rid of them and replace them with those that will be the servants of the people and do what the people want and what the people need. Serve the community. So this is really, as you said, we're taking it back and bringing it back to the people of the community. And the best part of it is that I no longer have to suggest it. It now comes back at me from the community itself.
It's kind of like a ripple effect. If you change one person's life, or if you change one community, the story starts to think, like in New Zealand back in the colonial days, we call it the bush telegraph, how rumors start spreading and that kind of thing.
That's it. It is the bush telegraph in Africa as well, and it's almost a done deal. When we've launched this hall, and again, we have a major South African star and celebrity by the name of Ntsiki Mazwai that's coming to perform here tomorrow night. She's doing it for free. She's not charging me anything. I'm paying her petrol and the tollgate fees from the private gangsters that have hijacked and taken over our roads. Then I make you pay exorbitant amounts of money just to drive on our roads. So we're paying those fees so that she can get to our town and come and perform here for the opening of the town hall. And then be here the following day for what will be a full-day talent competition to really give an opportunity, a platform for some of the talented people to release some of that creative tension and frustration. And she's going to be a judge in that the following day, and she's doing this all for free. And, you know, when you mention that Ntsiki Mazwai is coming to town, people actually, like, they don't believe it because she's a major celebrity. Why is she coming to our little town, you know? Because she loves what we're doing. And she's been very outspoken about what the government is doing to the people. And it's going to be a huge inspiration. And she's going to unite the people even more so when she tells them to support Ubuntu and support the community projects. Boy, you know, it's a huge, very, very strong message that we're going to send into the hearts and minds of the people of our town and our community.
Have you had any people try to rip it off, like start up the Ubuntu 3 movement or something?
Oh, yeah. No, it's happened. It's happened already. And this is where a lot of the unfortunate character assassinations and the people that start to attack me in the alternative media, because they, first of all, they believe, like you said, they believe everything they read. Or they come across a website that says X, Y, and Z, which has got nothing to do with us.
Would you mind
other people start?
Would you mind telling us actually who you're talking about, or do you just want to kind of like leave that out of it because it's a little bit?
I don't even want to go there. Don't want to give it any energy. But just, you know, some of your listeners will come across these attacks on me, especially the last week. They'll know who I'm talking. Well, let's just mention some names. Alfred Weber, unfortunately, has just gone berserk, and then this character called Mel V, or South Africa, she's actually an ex-South African journalist, or what she calls herself a journalist. She's just a gossip monger, that's all. And Melanie Vermaak, that's her real name, and they've just gone berserk. It's like they've just given up their careers to try and completely turn me into a monster. I'm not sure what's going on there, but it's been quite nasty. It's as if they have nothing better to do. You know, there's a whole world out there and I've become the focus of their slanderous character assassination. And so if people come across their work, just please just keep in mind that everything you hear from them is a very one-sided hearsay, slanderous accusations that are just allegations that are aimed at promoting a certain agenda, and they go out very successfully at sometimes and bait people into saying things. And, you know, you've probably, and you know how to do this as a journalist, you know how to bait people, how to make them say certain things that will support your agenda. And they've become very good at this, so that they sort of, I guess, make me look as bad as they want me to look, to try and undermine the Ubuntu movement. Because that's what you do.
With the loaded question, straw man arguments, that kind of logical fallacy, but yes, yeah?
Yeah, so it's everything you hear in those circles are half-truths, allegations that are aimed to harm me, to discredit me, to undermine the Ubuntu movement and the credibility and the integrity of the Ubuntu movement and my integrity. None of it is true, but I'm not going to go into the public domain and do this. I'm not going to give them that kind of platform, because that's all they do. They ride on the backs of people that do the hard work, and that gives them the infamy or the fame that they seek. Because it's all egotistical behavior, because they can't do anything themselves, so they have to ride the back of someone that's doing something to get exposure for themselves. And you know what I'm talking about.
I Well, it seems to me that so many people in this movement, as I mentioned before, the truth movement's really good at reading between the lines, but sometimes miss the actual lines themselves. And,
yeah,
like, if I was a person who was cleaning up the community, providing facilities for them, driving around in a beat-up old car, talking with elders, helping people, feeding them, that kind of thing, I mean, the mentality would have to be that of self-sacrifice for the greater good, which is the direct opposite mentality you would expect from people who try to gain power and control over other people and their lives. Therefore, if somebody is doing something bad amidst all that, not saying, yeah, Michael, they might be doing it by accident. Like, I get accused of being a shill who's knowingly lying to people all the time and then show me where I've been wrong, and I actually say, hey, you know what? That's not right. I am actually wrong. Okay? Yeah. And I completely admit it. But sometimes it's complete fabrication. And what happens is the fabrication becomes so big and so large that it becomes to muddy the waters all over the place. It starts to get into the search engine, so that if people are looking at you, is half the time they'll also be looking at somebody else's distorted version of you. And that's the true intention of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, well, let's just, since we're talking about the subject, Vinny, and you don't seem too emotional about it or have any preconceived ideas, let's just, for those that are listening to this, just let me make a statement here, because I'm probably not going to do it again, because I don't want to be drawn into this. And unfortunately, what's happened here is that Kreda Mutwa, you know, the beloved Kreda Mutwa, African shaman, that is beloved by so many millions of people around the world, has been drawn into it as the central character to make me look like this evil guy. And nothing can be further from the truth. In fact, it is everything you hear about me and Kreda Mutwa is completely the opposite. Even though they baited Kreda Mutwa in an interview a few days ago to say certain things about me, that the poor guy, I mean, he's 94 years old, he's losing his memory, he can't remember anything, and he's baited into situations to promote an agenda by these nasty wannabe egotistical maniacs. So let me just state for the record, no, I do not owe Kreda Mutwa any money. I don't owe him anything, okay? No, I did not steal millions of rands from Kreda Mutwa. Those are all lies that were created by these same journalists 5 years ago already. That was dealt with very eloquently and very openly by Kerry Cassidy, who wrote extensive articles on this, and we did extensive interviews on this. We exposed those people that try to make me look like an evil guy by stealing millions from Kreda Mutwa. All that has been dealt with. All of those are just horrible accusations against me, and I don't want to get drawn back into that. You see, the moment you get accused of this, then every Tom, Dick, and Harry expects that you're going to jump and answer all their questions on the internet and on Facebook, and millions of emails come in or questions come on Facebook. Well, we haven't had those, so it shows me that the response to these accusations is a very low level, has a very low level response or a belief in what they're saying. So none of that is true. I've been accused of plagiarism, of intellectual property theft. I mean, it's just unbelievable that everything I write in my books has been stolen. It's
that you actually stole archaeology?
Yeah, I don't know what they mean, but some people, there's still a few people out there that believe it, you know, that I stole everything I wrote about. I stole the information from other people, that I presented falsified information from South African professors in London, and I was all these kind of nonsensical personal opinions that they then go out and try and force down people's throats. So none of that is true. It's all falsified lies, and they unfortunately bait people like Kreda Mutwa, who I must say I love Kreda Mutwa dearly, but he has become, and this is what I did not want to do, and this is why I didn't want to get sucked into the public debate, but I'm going to just say this very briefly once. Credo Mutua, unfortunately, has been used by journalists like this, or people, malicious people with malicious intent, and is being used by others around the world, and has become almost like a vortex of negative energy. There is so much negative energy around Credo Mutua, and it involves David Icke, it involves other authors, it involves other shamanic workers, and this is why I don't want to get involved and sucked into this argument, because unfortunately, it is not going to look good for Baba Credo Mutua, because he will not be as squeaky clean as people think he is, and I don't want to be the bearer of that news.
I think it's really brave of you to actually come out and say all these things, Michael, because when people don't say these kind of things, it's kind of like the problem only gets worse if there's no awareness of it.
Yeah. So if I can say this, for anyone out there who's still has any possible doubts about this, the reason I don't want to get sucked into a public debate about this, and you can use this clip, cut it out, and share it with people if you want, because I don't want to be the bearer of bad news or negative news about Baba Credo Mutua. And he is not as clean as you think. And that's where I'm going to leave it. It's going to drag a lot of very famous authors and people who carry a lot of respect into this, and is going to reflect really badly on Baba Credo. I don't want to be the bearer of that news, and I think that's where we should just leave it.
Okay, we'll leave it at that then. Now, looking forward, thinking positively, thinking about activities, do you have a project for the next year for your town?
Absolutely. This is where it is. So after the meeting, the impromptu meeting under the tree with the municipal workers, we're going to have a meeting on Tuesday. We're going to discuss the supply of alternative electricity, which is, for those that follow the work I've been doing and the philosophy I've been spreading, electricity is probably the foundation of any new community that works against the current system. If we can provide our own supply of electricity, free electricity or virtually free electricity, that we install and then manage and control, and everybody has access to that free, I'll call use the word free liberally here, everybody has access to that form of electricity for free, in return of working 3 hours a week, I use 3 hours a week for specific reasons, 3 hours a week, in one of the community projects. We have identified about 24 community projects, the obvious things, you know, growing food, purifying water, the fish farm that we have that needs to be reactivated, a wood factory, a metal factory, cleaning the roads, the streets, the public parks, the sporting facilities, the town hall, the community kitchen, and so forth. The recycling, the rubbish dump, a dairy, a bakery, etc., etc. 24 community projects. Now, if in return for getting free electricity, you work for 3 hours a week in one of these community projects, you can imagine how much abundance we will create for our town. So much abundance that we'll be able to export the mushrooms we grow, the food we grow, the bread we bake, the wooden things we make from the wooden factory, everything and anything you can imagine. We can export that to our neighboring towns. That'll not only bring prosperity financially, so we can, while we're still trapped in a financial system, this money-driven system, we can use that money to keep upgrading, improving not only the community projects, but bringing in more community projects and upgrading people's lives so that people can actually improve their homes. We can start redesigning our town, fixing the roads, restructuring the town from a town design perspective so that it runs more energetically. There's a flow of positive energy. All these things can start to be implemented. The arts and culture can be improved with the money that's coming in from all these community projects. All the things that we create for our community will be free or virtually free for all those that participate in the community project. So you can see how this simple philosophy can change the lives and the minds and the hearts of the people very, very quickly. And electricity can be at the foundation of this.
Well, in a very real way, the 3 hours a week actually forces you to associate with other peoples in the community. And by that, it makes it stronger.
Yes. See, now you get it instantly. Some people still struggle with it, but you see, if you think positively about it, people hang out together in any case. Now they're going to hang out together, and you're not going to work the same kind of mundane thing that people obviously sometimes jump to conclusions. You're going to learn new things all the time because you're going to work in the dairy and learn how to make cheese. Then the next 2 weeks, you're going to work in the wood factory and learn how to work with wood. And then you're going to learn how to weld. Then you're going to learn how to breed fish. And you're going to learn how to plant seeds and how to make soil that grows different types of plants and seeds. So it's a skills transfer while you're working in the community projects. You're learning new things all the time and helping yourself and helping your community. And the moment this happens, so we're going to decide on what approach we're going to take in providing ourselves and our town with an alternative electricity supply. We're going to determine what bank account we're going to start paying our rates and taxes. Now, this is all part of the Ubuntu book. If you read my book, I suggest that this may happen in the towns, in our towns and communities. And it's almost as if I manifested this reality in my own town. Because I can tell you, 2 years ago, not in a million years, not for $1 million, I would have ever imagined I could manifest this or make this reality. And yet here we are sitting, and it's being proposed to me. I'm not even proposing it to the community. So I've really manifested this by writing the book, putting it out there, and it's now coming back at me, and I'm just guiding the people in that direction. It's quite spectacular. So we are very, very close to turning this little town of ours that was deeply divided and impoverished into a really interesting example as a contributionism community that creates abundance for all and exports this, creating the domino effect to all the neighboring communities.
And so doing, I was just thinking about this the other day, Michael, and you're kind of the perfect example of it. Uniquely as human beings, we're able to dream things up that don't yet exist. And if you don't tell anybody about that thing that you dreamed up, if you don't actually put it down on paper, if you don't make that documentary film, write that book, do that article, make that work of art, it stops. And you don't actually get to affect the 3D universe. And that's the beautiful power that we have, to bring things into it that don't yet exist.
Yeah. So I think writing the Ubuntu Contributionism book was a very important, probably, moment, not in my life, but in the whole the consciousness of this planet, because it really it put that thought out there, and not just the thought, but the way, the steps. What do we have to do to remove ourselves from this enslavement through money and move from a money-driven society to a society driven by people and their passions and their talents and their passions for life, where, well, money doesn't even exist?
Somebody once asked me, Michael, Vinny, how are we going to roll back this, you know, terrible system that's enslaving all of us? And I say, the same way it got implemented in the first place, little by little, son.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, Vinny, you got it. Take the first step. Don't be scared to walk the talk. And this is what I tell people all over the world when I travel and do these presentations. Don't be scared to talk about it. Tell everybody. Share it, like you say. If you keep quiet about it, it's going to fester inside of you. And you're going to keep wondering about it. Talk to people about it, and you'll be surprised how many people share your thoughts. They think what you're thinking, but they're just too scared to talk about it because they think everybody else is going to think they're crazy. Stop thinking that and start discussing this openly at dinner parties, in pubs, you know, by the river, wherever you are.
My friend John Eisen has a saying, I know I'm crazy, but that doesn't mean I'm wrong.
Exactly.
I believe that we've got to kind of, you know, put this with a little bit of a tongue-in-cheek, because, you know, having a good laugh here and there is really the mark of somebody who's trying to balance themselves out.
Yeah, exactly. I have to remind myself every day to have a sense of humor about all this stuff. Yeah, when you come under attack, and it hurts, you know, because you know what you're trying to do, and these people trying to make you look like an evil monster, it really hurts, and you got to be strong to get over that. Yeah. I must admit, and
especially when when you're reading things online, your brain really takes that stuff in. You know, there's no firewall there. You know, there's no emotional barrier that protects you from maliciousness and lies.
Yeah,
it's as if somebody was saying it to your face.
Strong. Yeah, you got to be strong, not to knee-jerk react and go out, go ballistic, and start, you know, hurling abuse back at people. You just can't do that. Just
I saw this incredible Facebook post one time. It's a picture of a dude at a computer and his wife at the door to the bedroom. And she says, "Honey, are you coming to bed?" And he goes, "No, somebody on the internet is wrong." And we've all been there, have we not? Michael, can you rattle off, please, a couple of your websites before we sign off? We only have a few seconds.
Well, ubuntuparty.org.za, most important one, and ubuntuplanet.org. Those are the two main websites you should go to and follow what we're doing. And join the Ubuntu movement. Sign up, subscribe, and start it in your country, wherever you may be.
And also, ladies and gentlemen, signing off here from the Vinnie Eastwood Show, please go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com today and make a donation or sign up for a subscription yourself and give a monthly gifting of a few bucks just to keep the old operation going. We'll see you again sometime. Thank you very much for listening.